Athens News Matters is sponsored in part by the WUGA Community Advisory Council, dedicated and involved individuals who help WUGA stay connected with our listeners, community organizations, and issues in the Athens area. Learn more at WUGA.org.
Today on Athens News Matters, Police Chief Cleveland Spruill joins us to talk about the state of law enforcement in Athens and the challenges his team faces as they confront crime in the classic city.
Just like most urban areas, Athens-Clarke County has its share of street gangs.
This is Athens News Matters. I'm Chris Shoup.
And I'm Alexia Ridley. Also today, former Senator David Perdue announces his run for governor of Georgia, with harsh criticism for both Stacey Abrams and current Governor Brian Kemp. Our panel looks at how a Republican primary challenger may affect the governor's race, plus the rest of the weekend news. Those stories and more coming up on Athens News Matters.
Hours ago, halfway around the world, the day has already begun.
Tens of thousands of people in Venezuela.
Britain is leaving the European Union.
Everyone was just running. People were crying. They were in tears. And we didn't know what was happening. Police kept telling us to move back, move back.
The thousands of protesters marched along a route.
When you need to know where the world went while you weren't looking. Morning Edition. Listen every morning.
This is Athens News Matters from WUGA News. I'm Chris Shoup. Amidst an alarming number of shooting deaths and traffic fatalities in Athens this year, and on the heels of November's arrest of 13 suspects involved in gang activity, Athens Police Chief Cleveland Spruill joins us to talk about the state of policing in our community. Chief Spruill, thanks so much for being with us today. We got a lot of questions for you, so let's get right to it. You know, there have been many shootings in Athens this year, a lot of them involving young people, as well as a shooting involving multiple victims in downtown Athens in September. Are we really experiencing more shooting deaths and gun violence, say, in years past? And if so, what would be the reason for this increase? And what is the police department doing to address this problem?
Sure. What I will tell you is that while overall crime in Athens-Clarke County is down about 7% compared to last year, we've seen a significant increase in aggravated assaults this year. That includes shootings. They're up about 16% compared to last year. People should be concerned about those numbers, but I will tell you that as part of what we're seeing nationally and regionally, folks all over the country are reporting the same type increases in, you know, shootings and violent crime across America. So, you know, it's not unique to Athens-Clarke County, but certainly it's not acceptable. And we're committed to taking the steps to address those kinds of incidents and take violent criminal offenders off of our streets.
Well, similarly, there have been over 20 traffic fatalities in Athens this year. This, too, seems unusually high. Are there any specific patterns to these fatalities or reasons for this increase?
During COVID-19, I think a lot of police law enforcement agencies laxed their traffic enforcement efforts. Remember, every time that there is a face-to-face encounter, such as a traffic stop, that's another opportunity for this invisible but deadly virus to be transmitted. And so a lot of police departments across the nation, including Athens, reduced our traffic enforcement efforts. And I think that led to more aggressive driving behaviors on the part of some of our motorists.
Well, in November, you arrested 13 suspects in a massive gang bust in Athens. Does Athens have a gang problem, would you say?
Before I move forward, I do want to say Athens-Clarke County is a safe community. It has a high quality of life, and we try to keep our crime rates down. So I don't want to create a sense of alarm, but I'll say that just like most urban areas, Athens-Clarke County has its share of street gangs, and oftentimes these street gangs can be very violent. And we saw that occurring, and we began an operation, Operation Tourniquet. That was a seven-month operation that targeted a gang known as 1831 Piru, which was operating in Athens and in this region. It was a collaborative effort where we had members of our gang task force, our drug task force, Safe Streets Initiative, work collaboratively with agents from the Georgia Bureau of Investigations and from the FBI. It was a 7-month-long investigation that culminated in November. The total number of arrests that came out of that operation was 37. 13 of them took place on the final day of Roundup here in Athens, Clark County. In that operation, we see 60 firearms, including a fully automatic machine gun. So that should give you an idea of how dangerous and violent and deadly these gangs can be. We also seized over $1 million in drugs and assets.
How is the policy to include mental health professionals in your response calls working out? How often have you been using these professionals?
Well, I can tell you we use them on a daily basis. We've been using them for some time now. I think you're familiar with Jerry Neesmith, a behavioral health co-responder program that we have. It's a collaborative effort between us and Advantage Behavioral Health. And what we do is we put a highly trained, skilled police officer with a mental health expert from Advantage. They ride around in cars on a daily basis, and they're listening to calls for service. And when they hear a call that they feel may be impacted or the result of mental health, substance abuse, they will interject themselves and work from a standpoint of trying to find out what the underlying causes of this person coming in contact with the criminal justice system and try to find resources and programs and treatment to help those people rather than funneling those people towards incarceration. It's been an outstanding program. It's been recognized regionally and nationally. A number of law enforcement agencies from all over the country have come in, or we've sent our teams out to kind of show them how we operate and what we do. It's been a very successful program. Right now, we have a total of 3 co-responder teams that are working. We've been authorized to build those numbers up to 7. My hope is by the end of, not the end of this year, but the end of the fiscal year, we'll be able to get to 7. Some of it deals with us finding, we have the officers, but we have to wait on mental health clinicians. So we're working to find team members and to build that program out so that we have a total of 7 response teams. While we're on this subject, if I can take the liberty, I would like to talk about another program that's geared toward the same type service. It's called the Alternative Response Teams, or ART. And it's a program that is really a program from Advantage Behavioral Health. But it's a collaborative effort between them and the police department, because quite often and on a daily basis, we get calls for service where we send the police, but they really would be better impacted if they had someone who was not the police, but that could address the issue or concern that they're calling from. They're not calling to report a crime. They're calling to report an issue, whether it be a need for services, whether it be substance abuse or medical issue, whatever. And so these ART teams are being formed now. They should be in place here, hopefully within the next month or so. And what they'll do is they'll be on our radio system, and we'll actually dispatch them to incidents. Certainly we'll make sure that we're not putting them in a dangerous situation, but incidents where there's no indication of a gun or violence or anything like that, and where it's not a crime, then we want to send them in to see whether they can address the issue without having to have the police there. So I think that's going to be a marvelous program. I'm looking forward to working with Advantage to roll that out sometime in the very near future.
Cleveland Spruill is the Chief of Police for Athens-Clark County. Thanks for taking some time with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Leaders across the nation are preparing their state's rollout of the 988 crisis line that goes live next summer. The federal act creating this mental health emergency line passed recently with a July 2022 deadline for launch. But Georgia, with its existing statewide mental health hotline, is already a few steps ahead. GPB's Ellen Eldridge has more.
When people think about calling 911 in an emergency, they're usually thinking about getting help fast.
911, what's the location of your emergency?
That means call centers need people to answer calls and dispatch police, fire, or ambulance.
Radio to 42.
But for people in active mental health crises,
there's a complainant's daughter is cutting her arm.
and those trying to help them, it's tough to remember Georgia's current 10-digit number. Next year, Georgia will join the nation in using a single 3-digit hotline. 988 is meant to be the 911 of behavioral health. And states are scrambling to be ready to go live next year. Judy Fitzgerald is the commissioner of the Department of Behavioral Health and Developmental Disabilities, which is leading the planning process in Georgia.
This is probably one of the largest and most transformative initiatives that I'm going to experience in my lifetime in behavioral health.
Georgia's General Assembly in March approved just over $114,000 for 988 planning, a year and a half ahead of the federal deadline for the number to go live. And the state is also ahead of the game with its existing Georgia Crisis and Access Line, known as GCAL.
If people call right now the National Suicide Prevention Hotline from Georgia, those calls already come to GCAL.
Georgia has a plan in place to send help, too. Because in some cases, while a person in crisis simply needs someone to listen, other times they will need a place to go.
The more we know about who the people are, where they're calling from, and what's available in their local community and exactly where they are, and you can get to them, that second category, right? I said first, someone to talk to, and second one, someone to go.
When people call 911, that can mean law enforcement response. That has, at times, proven deadly. But about 10% of calls to GCAL end with the person in crisis being taken to a mental health facility for their safety. Fitzgerald estimates the new 988 number will at least double calls to GCAL in the first year. The DBHDD has a planning committee to ensure all stakeholders are involved with the planning process.
We've got law enforcement representation, we've got healthcare representation, and really importantly, 911 is at the table with us as well.
And those stakeholders have real logistical challenges ahead. Kelly Miller is a mother who lives in Cherokee County. She says when her son had a breathing emergency, she dialed 911 from her home driveway. But the cell phone call was routed to a neighboring county.
Cobb County 911, what's the location of your emergency?
I thought they automatically knew where I was and could pin my location. And I was so frantic at the moment, the operator kept asking me what my location was, but I really wasn't paying attention. And I believe like the third or fourth time she said it, it dawned on me that I was calling from the cell phone and not the landline that I had reserved for this purpose.
That meant precious minutes were lost, even when Miller dialed the number we all know by heart, 911. Consider now how 988 will confuse an emergency situation when frantic people forget not only where they are, but also which three-digit number to call. That's why explaining what the new 988 number is for is one of the next steps in Georgia's rollout. If you or someone you love is experiencing a mental health emergency, call Georgia's current crisis access line at 1-800-715-4225. I'm Ellen Eldridge.
I'm Tim Franks. From the biggest breaking stories of the day to the important issues and trends, we're there.
This is an historic victory and what is a very important day.
This could change world history.
Everybody's going to pay a price. He will, everybody will.
And I am just so happy to be home and to put my feet on this land again.
Another huge development.
Join me and my colleagues for NewsHour from the BBC.
This is Athens News Matters from WUGA News. I'm Alexia Ridley. Georgia is entering an election year, and it's playing out to be cutthroat and costly. While Democrats are united behind Stacey Abrams, who announced her second campaign for governor last week, Republicans are expecting a bitter race between sitting Governor Brian Kemp and former Senator David Perdue, who announced his campaign Monday. To add fuel to the fire, Perdue received an endorsement from ally and former President Donald Trump on Tuesday, who has also endorsed other GOP candidates in the state, setting the stage for a primary rooted in division. So let's talk about one major issue that divides these two candidates, the results of the 2020 election. Joining me to discuss that are Chris Dowd with Athens Politics Nerd, Gwen O'Looney with WXAG, and WUGA's senior producer, Martin Matheny. Perdue has made it clear that in a large part, his campaign is targeting Kemp's refusal to overturn the 2020 election. Here's a clip from Perdue's campaign launch video.
Look, I like Bryant. This isn't personal. It's simple. He has failed all of us and cannot win in November. Instead of protecting our elections, he caved to Abrams and cost us two Senate seats, the Senate majority, and gave Joe Biden free rein. Think about how different it would be today if Kemp had fought Abrams first instead of fighting Trump.
Is this focus sustainable for Perdue's campaign? And how do we expect Governor Kemp to react?
I think it's pretty obvious that, one, David Perdue lost his race. Blaming Kemp is not doesn't make any sense at all. I think Kemp is going to totally ignore Perdue and ignore Trump and focus on taking credit for the improvements in Georgia that have occurred because of Biden's leadership.
Brian Kemp's campaign, or at least his super PAC, has already fired back at Perdue and basically blamed Perdue for losing his own race. And yeah, they are going to relitigate the 2020 and 2021 election. That's going to be a big part of this campaign. And in a primary, that might matter. The other thing I wanted to say is I think Governor Kemp is going to get a pretty significant polling bump after the first of the year and through the legislative session, because he's going to get a lot of earned media that David Perdue is probably not going to get. I mean, there are advantages to incumbency. The other thing is, I think that this is going to be a very hard race to poll, because I think that pollsters are still trying to figure out what the composition of the Republican primary universe is going to look like.
I think that's a good thing to keep in mind. But definitely, if you're Kemp, you don't want to be in the position you are right now as an incumbent and already neck and neck with someone like David Perdue. I think this is going to be a tough race for Kemp. And yeah, is this issue sustainable? Yeah, I think it is, unfortunately. I think the issue of democracy is really what the race is about on both sides.
But I really believe that Kemp has been a very good Republican governor.
I agree, but I think the Republican Party is so crazy right now that I would not be surprised at all if Perdue is the nominee.
It's not every Georgia Republican, it's not every conservative who buys into the big lie, who thinks that, you know, Brian Kemp single-handedly threw the Senate to Joe Biden and the Democrats. There are Republicans in Georgia who are absolutely fed up with the big lie. And the big question for me is, okay, what are they going to do in May? And what are they going to do in November?
Do you think this puts Republicans at risk of losing the state?
Yeah, I think the most likely thing to happen to me is that Perdue wins the primary and then loses the general. I think it puts, no matter what happens, I think Stacey Abrams benefits from it, from this infighting. I think it's really going to get brutal.
If Perdue wins this, I see Kemp voters moving away from Trumpism. I think that Stacey Abrams would greatly profit from Perdue win of the primary.
I don't think that many Republicans, regardless of how they feel about Donald Trump, can find fault with the way Kemp, you know, he's got a good economy going for him, and he's got the fact that he never really pushed to shut the state down. Those are going to be popular with Republicans.
For me, I don't know what's going to happen in this particular race, but I think long term, I think the Republican Party is the party of Trump and people like him. I don't see any way you can come back. So I think any primary candidate who taps into that on the Republican side is going to have an advantage, in my opinion.
Right. Well, Georgia is going to be the best test of Trump in this midterm in the nation.
We've discussed Stacey Abrams a bit. What do you think you can expect to see in her campaign?
An absolute metric ton of money.
I expect to see a continued focus on voting rights. I think that is a winning issue for Democrats. And yes, I think Martin's right. the money is going to come rolling in from all over the country, I think, from Georgia too, of course.
The Abrams campaign and the Democratic Party in general, the sense that I'm getting is they are really going to make a big deal about Medicaid expansion. They are really going to start beating the drum on healthcare costs, which I think are becoming an increasingly large issue. I mean, it's been a huge issue for decades.
On a local note, the Athens Mayor and Commission approved two major projects this week. The long-awaited eviction prevention program, which will bring $2.4 million in federal relief money through 2022, and a government-sanctioned homeless camp operated by the Athens Alliance Coalition. Do these projects properly address some of Athens' most pertinent issues with poverty and homelessness? If not, why?
Well, the challenge on eviction is getting the money out. The homeless camp, this will be the first time that that agency has had an actual location service. So it's a huge test for both of them. This is $6 million. There's a lot more money there. And I think our commission needs to look at fully funding the many services in this community that have been built credibility and served us for years with very little resources and are not at full capacity because of that.
I think that's a good point. I don't think that these two things alone, especially really adequately address the problem of homelessness. And I think the commission knows that. I think they think of these as first steps, and there's probably going to be more coming in the future. I hope we have a focus, you know, on a housing first approach to tackle homelessness, because really, you know, the cost of housing has been going up like crazy, and not just housing, you know, healthcare, childcare, tuition, everything has been going up.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that it's more progress than has been made on this issue in previous administrations. There's going to be, I think, so much oversight, maybe even more than oversight, coming from some commissioners on these issues that I feel like it's very possible that these organizations may be getting even a little bit more advice than they need from City Hall at times. The thing that I would encourage commissioners to spend a lot of time thinking about is, okay, these are good first steps. But commissioners have to also think about the boring, less sexy stuff. You've got to go back in and really start taking a look at what we're doing with zoning. What can we do locally via ordinance to deal with housing prices? And are there zoning changes that can be made? I know that when you say the Z word, everybody falls asleep, but we've got to address that.
Well, that's a good place for us to end, Martin. I do want to thank everyone for joining us. While this is the last show for this year, we will be back in January 2022. I can't believe I'm already saying January 2022, but we'll have more Athens News Matters after the break and more of our panel next year. Thank you, guys.
Well, thank you.
And merry, and happy to all of y'all.
Athens News Matters is supported in part by listeners like you and by WUGA's Community Advisory Council, which is proud to support in-depth and informative news from the Athens-Clark County Commission, Clark County School District, the University of Georgia, and every corner of the community.
This is Athens News Matters. I'm Chris Shoup. Our next story features two words that might make some listeners a little uncomfortable: sewer and socialism. Two things we don't spend a lot of time thinking about, especially in conjunction. But to ACC Commissioner Mariah Parker, sewer socialism could be a new and possibly better way to think about workforce development. We spoke earlier this week. So you introduced this idea to your colleagues earlier this month during a strategic planning meeting. Do you want to begin by just explaining what you mean by sewer socialism and why you're calling it such a provocative name?
Sure. So I didn't make this up. This actually stems from the 1910s up to the 1940s in Milwaukee. when various socialist candidates for office actually won office. You know, they took control of the city council in 1910. There was a congressman, the mayor as well. And the name actually derives from like the other socialists in the Socialist Party of America making fun of the sewer socialists for how proud they were of the sewer system in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And so the idea of sewer socialism is effectively how to apply the principles of, for me particularly, democratic socialism to the problems of local government. And so, you know, democratic socialism is about bringing power to working class people, democratizing, you know, every aspect of society, our workplaces, our schools, our housing. And so in thinking about that, I oftentimes think about how we can empower working class people to make liberatory choices, to make, you know, to actually be free, because you're not free if you don't have the material resources to make, you know, choices for yourself. I would say most of us would agree the 17-year-old making $7.25 an hour at Wendy's is not as free as Jeff Bezos. And so how do we get people free?
So how do the jobs themselves play a part in this as far as empowering people that perhaps are living by limited means? And you would assume that would mean that for some whatever reason, they don't have adequate wages. How does the job plan play into this?
In the context of Athens Clark County, there's been a lot of talk, for example, about raising the minimum wage, but we are prohibited by state law from doing so. Doesn't seem like the federal government is coming to help anytime soon. They could actually, the working class people of Athens could actually win living wages for themselves faster than the local government could. And so that's why I've been emphasizing workplace development lately, is that actually supporting workers and developing their current workplaces so that they are places that actually enable them to thrive, places where they are given paid family leave, they are given paid sick time, they are given wages that are adequate and just for the work that they put in. And thinking about this, when we think about work, instead of thinking about creating new jobs, or workforce development, like, oh, they just need more training to like have better skills to get better jobs. Well, all work is good. Like, you know, it's really hard flipping burgers. It's hot in that kitchen. Those hours are long. So that person deserves $15 an hour, if not more, 20. Let's start talking about 23. And the working class people of Athens can get that if they come together. And so I've been thinking about how the local government could support that.
Well, it sounds like you're also drawing a distinction between programs that maybe train people for better jobs and programs that will improve the jobs they already have. What kind of critique do you have of current job training programs?
I don't have any beef with current job training programs. There are gaps between the jobs that are offered in Athens and surrounding counties and like the skill sets that folks have. But the fact of the matter is there's always going to be jobs at the bottom. Someone is always going to do that work. And so focusing on the people that are working everyday jobs already is a way to expand our understanding of how we bring up the quality of life of everybody that lives in Athens.
Well, tell us a little bit more, if you could, about some of the current programs or incentives that the local government does support in terms of job training and job creation.
I mean, our economic development department is, you know, oftentimes working with corporations and large institutions to bring new jobs to Athens. I think about Ingelheim Boehringer. I think they do like animal pharmaceuticals and brought a lot of good jobs to Athens. Think about Caterpillar as another example. And so there's that aspect of it. We are coordinating, trying our best to coordinate with like the school system to think about how we can support education in the public school system to connect high school students with the kinds of jobs that we need here in Athens. So that those are things that are ongoing, but I would rather see us in our economic development department focus on supporting worker-owned cooperatives where everyone makes the decisions and everyone shares the profit. The Economic Justice Coalition has been working on a proposal for a worker center, which would effectively be a place where workers can come and get support in organizing their workplaces so they can win better wages and better working conditions. I would like to see the local government fund that, in addition to what we're already doing to support working people in this town.
Fair enough. Well, you introduced this idea in a strategic planning meeting. Can you explain to the layperson what a government's strategic plan is, and who else was at the meeting, and how did they receive your idea?
Sure. So every 3 years, we come up with a strategic plan for the next 3 years, and just think about what our goals are, what are our problems, and how do we intend to try to solve them over the next 3 years, including like concrete steps we can take in that direction, you know, all along that path to the world we want to see. And so I was joined by, you know, several staff members, including, you know, County Manager Blaine Williams, and a number of other people representing various departments, and then commissioners, Tim Denson, Jesse Houle, Melissa Link, Carol Myers, were all in attendance that day. And so when I brought up this idea, we were originally talking about workforce development. And I was trying to think of a way to capture, you know, this issue of just the fact that people who are already working, you know, we've historically always had a high poverty rate and a really low unemployment rate. There's tons of people who are already working who just can't get by. And so how do we capture what their needs are and address what I consider some of the exploitation that they experience? And so, you know, I pitched the idea of workplace development and why. Bringing up, for example, the fact that in the pandemic, you know, business owners might have got PPP loans, but with some of the bar owners downtown, the people they were paying under the table couldn't get unemployment. So, you know, not just about supporting small businesses, not just about supporting workforce training, but how do we like bring justice for those working people that keep these businesses operational?
Well, Mariah Parker is the Athens-Clarke County Commissioner for District 2. Thanks so much for stopping by today.
No doubt. Solidarity forever.
Every year, Athens kicks off the winter holiday season with a parade and the lighting of the holiday tree at City Hall. WUGA's Sophie Gratis gives us this audio postcard about this year's tree.
It's a gloomy Wednesday at Athens-Clarke County City Hall, which makes the community Christmas tree stand out even more as Mayor Kelly Gertz gazes up from a downtown street corner.
Humanity needs some rest and reflection right now. And so to be able to come out here and look at this gorgeous tree, so nicely decorated, and see the sun peeking through the clouds behind it, gives me some energy that I know I'm going to need for the coming year.
It's got ribbons, ornaments, and lights along its roughly 20-foot tall body. Beyond being a physical representation of Christmas time, the tree is also rooted in local history and tradition.
My name is Stanley Beasley. I'm the Athens-Clarke County Buildings Landscape Supervisor.
Beasley has overseen the Community Christmas Tree Program for 5 years, but started as a crew leader in 1996. He's a University of Georgia alum who got his start pulling weeds, he said. He worked at the university golf course, and after 26 years working with the county, his second ever full-time job, he's moving on.
I'm leaving at the end of the year, so this is going to be my last tree. So the guys, you know, it's kind of bittersweet, I think, for all of us.
As crew and leader, Beasley's helped install a total of 26 trees at City Hall. Every year, it's landscapers like him that make it happen. In some form or another, Athens' annual parade of lights and Christmas tree ceremony has been going on for decades. The tree is always donated by someone in the area, and that family or individual is honored at the parade.
You know, we usually want it to be around 25 to 30 feet tall and about 20 feet wide. Sometimes we don't have a backup, so, you know, it's kind of nerve-wracking. You know, you got to get it right the first time.
For Beasley's final tree, we head over to Olivia Randolph's house. Randolph, 92 years old and retired from her job as an elementary school lunch lady, meets me outside.
I've been here 65 years.
In this house?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. She tells me that she originally wanted to donate a tree in her front yard, but that one was too difficult to cut down. The crew instead found a tree further back on her land, growing undisturbed. Randolph's two daughters, son, son-in-law, and nephew gather on Randolph's property to watch the crew cut down the tree. It's a bit shorter than years past, says the crew. Meanwhile, Randolph chats with me about her garden. She grows peppers and onions, and her upcoming birthday.
Like I've got a friend that she turned 92 in August, and my birthday's in June. I told her, I said, I'm just thinking we could still remember our name.
Yes. So true. After a faulty boon gives the crew some trouble, the tree is tied down.
There we go. Winner, winner.
And starts making its way to City Hall, where it's placed in a manhole on the corner of College and Washington Avenues. not without significant effort. The crew secures the trunk with wedged wooden stakes and wires. Beasley warns of wind gusts. The star weighs almost 60 pounds, he says, so they better get it right. Completing the tree takes a couple of days and a lot of work. But back at City Hall, just like hundreds who crowded around the tree last Thursday, Mayor Gertz says it's worth the effort.
Never more do I look forward to anything in this town than when the downtown is decorated for the holidays. And of course, this tree is a centerpiece of that.
For Athens News Matters, I'm Sophie Gratis.
Every day, NPR's All Things Considered includes news that keeps you ahead of the curve.
If this issue is not important enough for us to draw a line in the sand, what issue is?
Plus, the unexpected.
The wing, the skin, the neck, the heart, you're making chicken meatballs, cooking the knee cartilage.
All Things Considered from NPR News.
This is Athens News Matters. I'm Alexia Ridley. Every year, our Athens News Matters staff closes out the year with a playlist of holiday favorites. And this year, we also ask a few friends of the show to join in. So, in the spirit of the season, here is our holiday playlist. And since I'm hosting this segment this year, I get to go first. Enjoy. My Christmas choice this year drew some criticism, derision, and scorn from a couple of my colleagues. That would be Jimmy Sanders and Martin Matheny, and yes, I'm calling them out. And while I enjoy all types of Christmas music, from traditional songs and carols to what I consider newer classics, I'm not choosing one of those this year. My pick is Christmas Eve Sarajevo from the Trans-Siberian Orchestra. It's loud, over the top, with a pounding, relentless beat, but I like it, for whatever reason. And I do think you can like a pop culture classic, even if it isn't considered a work of art.
I'm Martin Matheny, and I'm a producer on Athens News Matters. For my holiday music pick, I'm taking you from Sarajevo to Washington, D.C. While some of my colleagues like their music loud and maybe a little bit ostentatious, this year I'm looking for something with a little more style, something with a little bit more of a laid-back groove. This is a track from the godfather of go-go, Chuck Brown. Go-go is a DC product, the capital city's own homegrown blend of funk and soul that became popular in the 70s. And just last year, it was named the official music of our nation's capital. It's hard to find a Chuck Brown tune that doesn't groove hard, but this year his treatment of God Rest You Merry Gentlemen is at the top of my personal holiday playlist.
And the soul felt its worth, a thrill of...
My name is Robin Whetstone, and my pick for the holiday playlist is O Holy Night. This song has a line in it that my three children and I often sing to our cats when they're involved in grooming themselves. You know, the part that goes, "Fall on your knees." Well, come over to our house anytime, holidays or no, and you will see the children singing to a cat as it claws at itself, "Scratch all your fleas." Then the whole family will sing a few lines of the actual song, bringing the magic of the season back into our lives regardless of the month. I like holiday music that is versatile and can be applied to any situation that also involves cats. So that's my pick for the A&M holiday playlist, O Holy Night.
I'm Kathy Bradbury, contributor to Athens News Matters, and my favorite holiday song is Mele Kilikimaka. I just love this island greeting from the land where palm trees sway. The song immediately transports me to warmer climates, and Bing Crosby's golden vocals are quintessential this time of year. Mele Kilikimaka.
Mele Kilikimaka is a wise way
to say Merry Christmas to you.
Children go where I send thee.
How will I send thee?
Listen. I'm going to send you one by
This is Jimmy Sanders, General Manager of WUGA. My pick for this year is Children Go Where I Send Thee, as recorded by Nick Lowe.
Children go where I send thee.
How will I send thee?
I'm going to send you.
This song is a traditional Appalachian Christmas song and has been performed by a wide variety of singers. British singer Nick Lowe became well known as a practitioner of New Wave, or power pop, music in the late 70s. His version of the song blends bluegrass style call and response harmonies with a skiffle rockabilly beat.
I'm Allison Salerno, and I'm a contributor to Athens News Matters. One of my favorite pieces to listen to during the holiday season is a rendition of the 16th century Gregorian chant, Gaudete, performed by Medieval Babes, a British female ensemble.
Gaudete, Gaudete, Christus est natus, ex Maria Virgine Gaudete.
For several years when I was living in New Jersey, I had the privilege of singing in a parish schola, which is a choir for chants, an ancient form of a cappella worship songs in the Roman Catholic Church. I listened to this piece over and over and over to learn my part. It wasn't only the pieces that were tough to sing. The musical notation was tough to read. Instead of the five-line staff notation Western musicians are used to, chant is written in what is called gnomes. So we were reading and singing in a different musical language.
Then one foggy Christmas Eve, Santa came to say, Rudolph, with your nose so bright, won't you guide my sleigh tonight? Then how the reindeer.
I'm Gwen O'Looney, and I'm a panelist on Athens News Matters.
Rudolph the red-nosed reindeer, you'll go down in history.
Every time I hear Rudolph the red-nosed reindeer, I think of all the people who might learn that disabilities can often be an asset, and people who are behind can become leaders.
I'm Sophie Gradas, and I'm a producer and reporter for Athens News Matters.
I have chosen Happy Christmas by John Lennon and Yoko Ono. The introduction to this song is amazing, with John Lennon and Yoko Ono whispering little, like, pet names to each other. I don't love most Christmas music, but this song stands on its own enough for me so that it's not lumped in with other more traditional songs that have been done and redone over and over. Whether it's Yoko's voice, which I adore, or the undoubtedly joyful rhythm of this song, it fills my cold, cold heart with a little bit of joy during the holidays.
All right, one selection, really? Just one selection. Two Gabby Awards for a music show, and I get one selection. Okay, okay, fine. When thinking about my favorite selections to hear during the holidays, I have to admit I lean more towards songs that enjoy less coverage. Because let's be honest, traditions aside, do we really long to hear yet another version of Jingle Bells? For me, I look for those tunes that make me think of Athens during the holidays, and so rightfully so, songs by Athens-based groups like this one. By one of my favorite bands from the 90s, Bloodkin. Yes, Bloodkin has a Christmas song. Here's Christmas in August, featuring vocals by the late Daniel Hutchins.
You've been listening to Athens News Matters from WUGA News. Our producers are Martin Matheny, Jean Davis, Devin Zwald, Robin Whetstone, Sophie Gratis, Kara Nelson, and Abby Buston. The opinions expressed on this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of WUGA or the University of Georgia. If you missed one of the stories on this week's broadcast or just want to listen again to some of our previous reporting and interviews, head over to WUGA.org to find all of our work online. Join us next week for the first installment of a three-part series, The Prime Effect, What is Amazon? From WBUR Boston. The series digs into what Amazon is and the power it has. For Chris Shoup, I'm Alexia Ridley. As always, thanks for listening to Athens News Matters from WUGA News. Have a happy and safe holiday season.